Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is episode 181 of Paranormal Stories. This episode I'm reading from Christy Hoffman's book, Real Life Angel Encounters. Real people share real stories of miraculous encounters. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. And when reading these books, I always find such amazing information that never makes it into the podcast. And here, I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record this extract, and the author kindly said yes. But before I start, I should just let you know, as a warning, that this recounts a school shooting incident. So this is titled The Cokeville Miracle, and this is what Christy has written. The unspeakable happened one Friday afternoon in 1986 in the town of Cokeville, Wyoming. Cokeville is a small town and heavily Mormon, or LDS. The story begins with David Young. Young graduated with a degree in criminal justice from a small college and became the town marshal for Cokeville. But after the six-month probationary period, he was let go for misconduct. During that time, he met and married a woman named Doris. They had both been married before and each had children. Doris, one daughter, and David, two. David's youngest daughter, Penny, still lived with them. When they moved, David became increasingly isolated and troubled. He composed a philosophical manifesto, Zero Equals Infinity, in which he argued for a new world order, or as he called it, a brave new world. David had two long-time friends, Gerard Depp and Doyle Mendenhall. They saw his treatise as a get-rich-quick scheme that he called the Biggie. What they didn't know is that he was planning to take over Cokeville Elementary School and hold the children hostage for $2 million each. He planned to speak with President Ronald Reagan before setting off a bomb that would take them all to the New World where he would reign supreme. In his writings, the imaginary world of Zero Equals Infinity felt like his last resort. He revealed the plan to Depp and Mendenhall on the way to the elementary school. The friends decided they were not going to participate in this scheme, and David handcuffed them inside the van. Shortly after 1 p.m, mother, father and daughter left the van and walked through the school's front doors. They brought with them hundreds of copies of David's manifesto, 9 handguns, 4 rifles and a gasoline bomb in a grocery cart with a shoelace trigger attached to David's wrist. Upon entering, the daughter hesitated and went back to the van with the plan of reporting her father's plans at Cokeville Town Hall, which she did. Meanwhile, David set up the bomb in Classroom 4. Doris went room to room and gathered the students and faculty, claiming there was a surprise in another room, maybe an assembly or an announcement. In reading eyewitness accounts, they later said they didn't quite believe her, but it was so unusual and so unprecedented that they followed her anyway. When they got there, they realised that something was amiss when David started distributing and reading from his manifesto. When the authorities arrived, Young demanded to speak to the president, to whom he'd sent a copy of his manifesto, and asked for a ransom of $308 million, or $2 million per person. There were 154 people gathered into one 30 by 32-foot classroom, 136 children, 9 teachers, 6 staff, as well as 3 other adults, including a job applicant and a UPS driver, plus David and Doris. It was a hot day, making the crowded room feel even smaller. Gasoline leaking from the homemade bomb started to make people feel ill. As the situation became clearer, children began sobbing, complaining of headaches, and asking to go home. One child threw up from fear, and other children were starting to become sick from the gas fumes. Teachers asked if they could open the windows, which David allowed. The teachers also taped off an 8 by 8 foot square around David and the bomb. They called this a magic square, and the children were not allowed inside because it seems they were making David even more agitated. The teachers wanted to keep the children away from him, and more importantly, from the bomb. Then the teacher's asked to bring in books, art supplies, games, and a television to help keep the children calm. Doris tried to calm everyone's nerves by telling them to think of the day as a great story to tell their grandchildren. Meanwhile, parents and authorities began to gather outside the school. All were growing fearful, and the students and teachers in the classroom decided to pray. When they started to pray, David got even more agitated and decided to go to the bathroom. He took the detonating string off his wrist and put it on Doris's wrist, reminding her that any sudden movement would detonate the bomb. Shortly after 4 p.m, 2.5 hours into the standoff, Doris forgot she had the shoelace on her wrist and pointed to something, setting off the bomb. The bomb was designed to cause maximum damage. Not only was it full of shrapnel, it was designed to send flammable powder into the air so that when it detonated, the air would be in flames. When the bomb detonated, teachers shouted for everyone to get down, and black smoke filled the room. There were flames everywhere. Doris herself was on fire, and several children were hurt by the explosion and flames. Thankfully, most had been sitting near the windows and doors hoping to get some fresh air, so they were able to get out quickly through the open doors and windows. When David heard the bomb go off, he came in and saw his wife in flames and shot her either to put her out of her suffering or out of anger that she had ruined their plan. David then started shooting wildly into the surrounding smoke, hitting one person, the music teacher, John Miller, who had been helping everybody escape. Miller made a full recovery, and David Young went back to the bathroom and shot himself. Outside, parents, police and authority figures were scrambling and panicked, trying to see if anyone was left in the building and trying to put children with their parents. A total of 79 people were taken to area hospitals. All in all, there were only 2 casualties, David and Doris Young. As reporters started converging in Cokeville, another story emerged of the miracles. Investigators found that the bomb had been altered. Had it been intact, it would have leveled the entire wing of the school. As it was, some of the wires had been cut before detonation. Also, a gasoline leak prevented the explosive power from setting the air on fire. And despite there being a great deal of shrapnel in the bomb, no one had been hit. So this bomb, which should have blown out an entire wing of the building, had gone straight up into the air and minimised human harm. Stories soon started emerging of a beautiful woman in white who told children to sit by the windows, and several children saw angels with faces of loved ones over each person just prior to the blast. One child reported a teacher helping her flee the burning classroom, only to recognise later that that teacher was really her great aunt, who had died many years before. Another student recalled that her dead grandmother had told her to listen to her brother, who was sitting by the window. Even the lead investigator's son pointed to an image of his deceased grandmother as the angel who'd protected him from the fire. Some even reported that angels came and joined hands and forced the explosion upwards. In short, what could have been a tragedy with hundreds in lost lives had become a miracle. Some even reported that the outline of an angel was seen later amongst the ruins in the shrapnel. Was it the faith of the town that summoned the miracle? Or did angels converge on the innocent children and teachers of Cokeville Elementary? A movie of the event has since been made called The Cokeville Miracle, available on Amazon. After seeing the film and reading the accounts, the film does a very good job of depicting what happened that day in 1986. Today I was reading from Christy Hoffman's book, Real Life Angel Encounters. Real people share real stories of miraculous encounters. If you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. And my book on verified near-death experiences is out now on Amazon, and you can get it on audiobook, paperback, or Kindle. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife, or click on the button on my homepage, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. Just so you know, if you're a patron, you get a 25% when you book a past life regression session with me, and I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.